with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
And this is Wayne.
Good morning, guys.
Hello.
Morning.
We had planned to bring you that March Madness, that ooey gooey March Madness this week.
We promised it to you.
That's right, we did. It was a promise written in blood. But unfortunately, Andrew has had to go off and do things. And so we wanted all four of us to be present for that. So we will wait until we can have all four of us together, which means March Madness may actually become April Madness.
Yeah, I mean, everyone does a March Madness thing. That's not original. Who does April Madness? We do.
That's right. We are bleeding edge over here. Bleeding edge.
Is there a different word we can use than madness because it's April to keep the alliteration?
I don't know. April assholery.
April assholery. I'm looking at thesaurus.com. I do not see any that start with A.
What about spring?
April abnormality.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
April yeah. aberration.
Yeah, there you go. April aberration.
There we go. April unsoundness. No.
Ooh, that sounds
that's
good.
That's
April
better.
Unsoundness.
April absurdity. There we go. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. We'll figure it out before. Before
we get the marketing team on it, and we'll get this rebranded. You know, very exciting.
Well, speaking of absurdity,
yes,
and aberrations.
Uh-huh.
You know, we didn't talk about this, but recently Funko acquired the company Mondo. Mm-hmm. So Funko, you know, they make the pops, the toys, the, you know, all sorts of like little knickknacks. Right. I was a big Funko pop collector before, you know, I got tired of it. It was 3 months of my life I can never get back.
And you're back to Beanie Babies now?
I'm back to I don't even know what I collect right now. probably nothing because I have no space. So Funko acquired Mondo, known for high quality posters. In fact, I've got literally some posters hanging up in my office right now. Just a great visual company. They've also done some high scale action figures of like He-Man characters and stuff like that. Well, this week, basically, I mean, not long after the acquisition, Funko has laid off almost all of the Mondo staff. And the Mondo, which is known for their poster business, also records and stuff like that, but they've basically killed the poster division, which is surprising because that's literally – why would you buy Mondo if not for the poster division?
Right.
It's almost like they bought it just to kill any competition.
It's kind of like when Marvel bought Malibu.
Yeah.
You know, they bought it for the coloring technology and then just killed everything.
Yeah.
And I miss Malibu. I never heard of Mongo. So,
I feel like you've probably seen some of their posters. They had a great line of Batman the Animated Series posters.
Yeah, I probably have. I just don't know the company name.
It's limited edition. You know, I mean, it's one of those. They're going to release it at a certain time. And if you're not in that initial purchase, you're not going to get it because they will sell out.
Yeah. In fact, I'm looking at my Mondo Justice League soundtrack, Mandalorian soundtrack, my Batman the Animated Series soundtrack, Mondo records. Now, it doesn't say anything about the records division, so they may keep that for all we know. But, I mean, the records division was kind of tied to the poster division because they used the poster art. Or the poster artists to design the record labels and stuff. So
that's sad. I don't think I ever bought anything from Mondo, but I sure did enjoy the artwork.
Me too. You know, it's I bought plenty of posters until I ran out of wall space. Basically,
see, that's my thing is I've got limited wall space and I'm trying not to buy things that I know will never go up on the
wall. Yeah. But and maybe the poster division was losing sales or something like that at some point.
Well, maybe everybody who has money to spend has, tapped out their wall space. Maybe everybody is in the same situation you and I are in, Paul.
I mean, to be fair, it's not an uncommon thing. You know, I hear it from most geeks of a certain age. you know, unless you are, you know, Guillermo del Toro and you have your own house for your shit, you know, you do tend to run out of space at some point.
Well, you know, I have to say, I enjoy being married. I love my wife. I enjoy the life we have together. But there was something to be said for being a single man in a home all by himself and able to decorate the entire house as you will. You know, I will never forget the day my wife moved in and she started pointing at all the things that needed to come out of the living room. And, you know, it was my barbed wire statue. It was my
barbed wire.
Yeah. It was my Beast from the X-Men movie statue, you know, where Fraser Crane is dressed as the Beast.
Well, I mean, to be fair, I'd probably make you get rid of that garbage, too.
Yeah. It was all of my starships, you know. Like, wait.
I don't have any of this. My wife bought display cases so I could display things. And the Doctor Who exploding TARDIS giant painting over the TV she bought because she wanted displayed. And
yeah, but you married a geek, and I think that's the difference.
Yeah, fair.
we did not. So we have our rooms, and so we live amongst our stuff in that room, but never shall it leave that room.
That's right. That's exactly correct. What is this doing out here?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I just thought, now what were you doing thinking?
Yeah. It's like, well, it's Indiana Jones. It's kind of like not, it's kind of open to interpretation. Like, no, it's not. It's Indiana Jones. Put it away. It goes in the office.
Does your wife start referring to you as it? You know, because mine does that from time to time.
Referring to
it, will remove it.
No, Smeagol. It will remove it.
Yes,
that's hilarious. But you know, at least we don't have to worry about removing posters because Mondo, sadly, is definitely. It seems like it's dissolving as a company. So it's a shame. Great. Sorry to hear that. They put out some great products. Yeah. Like I said, in recent years, I was more into the records than I was the posters. But, you know, still, it's a bummer to hear that. And, you know, for what it's worth, it's not like I don't think Funko's, you know, we'll see. But I don't feel like Funko's going to be around much longer either. Like, Funko's used to be like people would go to the mall at like 5 a.m. and get the special Funkos and stuff like that. And now you see that crap everywhere.
It's like they're Beanie Babies.
Yeah, they're Beanie Babies, basically. Yeah. I mean, we're here for a while, and now it seems like that market's drying up a little bit anyway. Yeah.
I'm so glad I never got into that market because it would have taken so much money considering they make them of everything.
Yeah, but they're relatively inexpensive. They just take up a lot of space. They're not, you know, because they've got the little box, and you don't want to take them out of the box.
Oh, sure you do.
Yeah, I have some. I did buy the Looney Tunes as Superheroes line.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a good one. So, yeah, well, what killed Funko for me was other Funko fans.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I was like, I'm just not that person who's going to just go to the mall for a Funko Pop at 5 a.m. in the morning being first in line. I mean, people with like camp chairs and stuff, people just got aggressive. It's honestly, it's, you know, toxic fandom. Not for those who listen to the podcast and are Funko fans. I'm talking about you. No, now, I'm not. I'm not talking about you because I'm sure you're good people.
The part of that story that revealed itself to me as toxic was going to the mall.
There is that. Right? Well, I mean, this was years ago, right? I mean, I haven't been collecting Funkos regularly for probably 4 or 5 years pre-COVID, at least. But yeah, I just, you know, Funko fans not really friendly. They, you know, they're very aggressive about getting there early with their camp chairs and being first in line and, you know, hogging all the good stuff. Just I'm not that person. I just want the one that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like people would. You know, if you can get two of each, you'll get two of each. And it's like, you don't need two of each. Just buy one and leave one for me. So I'm talking about you, Funko fans.
You amuse me, Paul.
Huh?
You amuse me.
Well, you know, speaking of toxic fandom, This is a long lead into our next topic.
Uh-huh. Okay. I'm just going to sit back and see how you get there.
Well, speaking of toxic fandom, you know, it was announced this week that Zack Snyder's trilogy, you know, he would be doing a trilogy called the SnyderCon, I think. I think over the span of a week that he would be showing all three of his movies, I think all out in California, at a big event for charity. And, you know, Snyderverse fans, of which I am one, admittedly, you know, we're all very happy about it. But, of course, the interwebs are all very upset about, you know, oh, Snyderverse is dead, blah, blah, blah. James Gunn sucks. You know, and for what it's worth, at least James Gunn seems to be trying to let it go in stride. And just focus on his announcements. And, you know, he announced this week that he would be, after the rumors, because it was rumored that he would be, I think someone accidentally dropped the ball on it, releasing it before he did, that he would be not just writing, but also directing that new Superman Legacy movie that he's working on. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, he put a very nice Facebook or Instagram post about it, you know, explaining about, you know, his father and his relationship with his father and how that led him to become a Superman fan. And he really wants to focus on the dignity that Superman deserves in cinema. So I don't know that anyone's actually surprised
that James Gunn is directing
Superman Legacy.
Yeah. But, yeah. I don't think anybody's surprised either.
Yeah. And we're still over 2 years away from that movie.
Well, it makes sense because, you know, the writing it just recently completed, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they're casting now. I mean, that's a lot to make happen in 2 years for a big budget tentpole kind of movie like that.
Yeah, because it just feels like, you know, they announced last year that James Gunn was taking over the DC universe. And really, this is the first movie, I think, isn't it, in that plan of his? So yeah. We're still, you know, and obviously, like you said, big tentpole movies, they take time to put together. And I think we're going to get four of them in 2025. But we're still, you know, this year we have The Flash, Blue Beetle, Aquaman. Is that all?
Shazam, Fury of the Gods.
No, I didn't. No, Shazam, Fury of the Gods. But I think that's are they just taking 2024 off, I guess?
Maybe.
I don't think there's anything in production.
Did you see all the shade around Shazam this week?
Ooh, yeah, I did. About The Rock.
Yeah, and how The Rock, you know, just shut it down for having a Zach Levi. Is that his name?
Yeah, well, yeah, Zach Levi. And apparently they were supposed to feature the Justice Society.
Right.
Introduced in Black Adam in the post-credit scene, and he shut that down.
Yeah. And, you know, it is interesting to me that Dwayne The Rock Johnson has that kind of power over at, you know, Warner to be able to shut it down when he doesn't own the characters.
Yeah, that was my reaction, too. I mean, why does he have any say in them being in there? Yeah. I mean, him being in there is one thing, but
He doesn't own the Justice Society, right? Yeah. Like, I can understand him shutting it down for his movie.
Right.
Like, you know, I think it was supposed to be Shazam instead of Superman. And, you know, The Rock was not at all hiding. that was not going to happen, right?
Like, I honestly don't blame him for not including Shazam in his movie. Because, you know, the characters as they appear on screen are so outside of each other's circle. You know, and I think it doesn't make a whole lot of sense given how the Zach Levi Shazam is portrayed. I mean, I just feel like Black Adam as portrayed by The Rock would just simply destroy Shazam. I mean, because he just can't perform up to that level.
Yeah.
It is frustrating to me because, like, the first movie could have been good, but it's ridiculous to me that the kid is actually, you know, portrayed really well, Billy is.
Yeah.
And then the moment he turns into Shazam, it's like he loses all bit of intelligence and becomes 6 years younger.
Yeah, it's a terrible. The first, I haven't seen the second one. The first movie was terrible.
Yeah, first movie I didn't care for. I mean, I thought I cared for it enough, but clearly not enough to have seen the second one yet. Has any of us seen the second one yet?
No, I'll watch it on streaming possibly. Yeah.
It's going to be on streaming next month.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see John Wick 4 in theaters, but I'm not. But Shazam, I'll wait for.
Yeah. I don't blame The Rock at all for keeping that character out of his film and wanting to lean into Superman, because Superman is absolutely on par with Black Adam.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, that's his friend. Like, I mean, from the freaking beginning, he right. said that it was going to be Black Adam versus Shazam. So, like, the fact that I get why Zach Levy has mm-hmm. some animosity, because his movie is bombing. Yeah. So of course now it's pointing the fingers that, like, if Black Adam had let Shazam be in his movie, no, it wouldn't have changed anything.
No, because you can dress that turd up as much as you want, still a turd.
Yeah, we didn't see it. Ultimately, three guys on
who a love comic comics podcast and love the character.
See the movie.
I get that. What I don't understand, again, is how he can keep those Justice Society characters out of the film, out of the Shazam movie. That makes no sense to me at all. And I don't know if that was just deference that Warner's paid to him, or if he has some sort of stake in them in terms of their movie depictions.
Maybe he's just a really big guy and they're afraid to make him angry.
Yeah.
There was a lot of shade being thrown by producers at Warner that, Dwayne Johnson is an arrogant ass, and I was like, damn, here is your guy who, yeah, I get you spent more money on Black Adam than you made back. But that movie made a ton of money. It just didn't, meet up to the marketing campaign. Right. Yeah. The expense of that marketing campaign is what put him over budget. The guy is a star. I would not get on his bad side in terms of characterizing his business tactics.
Yeah.
I'd keep that inside.
And for what it's worth, I mean, Black Adam, I understand it wasn't the big hit, but it's did better than Shazam.
Well,
it'll end up doing better than Aquaman will. And it was actually revitalizing a little bit. Like, people were very excited about Henry Cavill.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that movie, number one, I enjoyed watching it in theaters. I enjoyed watching it at home. I will watch it again. I mean, that's a movie that I think will age well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would have been a great Kickstarter to the DCEU again, having Henry Cavill in it, and then having a Superman movie that features Black Adam. But, we're not ever going to get that film. That's nope. done. And, we're probably never going to get another Black Adam movie again. No. I think that's done, too.
Yeah, I think that relationship is – even if they wanted him, I feel like that relationship is soured at this point.
Yeah. No, I think we're done. I think the next time you see Black Adam, if you ever see Black Adam on screen again, it'll be a different actor.
Yep.
And I think it'll be 10 years down the road.
Easily, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think they're focused on what they're doing now with the core of the DC characters, and you can just forget that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's too bad, because I do think The Rock was well matched to that character.
I do too. Not originally, but ultimately, I think you could tell he was passionate about the project and he did a good job with it.
Absolutely. Well, and you could not have asked for an actor who would sell the show more than he did. And of course, a lot of that had to do with the fact that I think he was executive producer on that film.
Mm-hmm.
He had a stake in it. So, he was, full time all the time about Black Adam for years, from beginning of production all the way to, post premiere, he was all about selling that movie. And you want that level of commitment.
You don't see Joaquin Phoenix doing that about Joker.
No. You don't see most actors doing that. You see them do their press tour that they're contracted to do, but you don't see them on fire for the project like The Rock is. And, The Rock could sell, water to a fish. I mean, he is just so on point all the time. I would want to remain in business with Dwayne Johnson rather than be out of business with Dwayne Johnson.
Agreed. So. Well, you know, another person that said that they're pretty much done is Ben Affleck. You know, he's promoting his new movie Air. You know, but there was a rumor on deck that he was in contention or had an interest in directing Batman: The Brave and the Bold. The Brave and the Bold, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, featuring Batman and son. And he's like, no, you know, he's like, no offense to them, but what they're doing over there is not something I have an interest in being a part of.
Well, and I saw him make a comment like, I don't want any part of that. I mean, it was very like, that's not a good atmosphere over there. No, thank you.
Yeah, it was very, you know, it was very pointed. Like,
it wasn't just, oh, no, that's not a project for me. It was like there was an air of judgment to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, fuck that, you know.
Yeah. And all the, you know, it just has me feeling like maybe these are movies by committee, right? Or something like that. And I think that's just not what he has an interest in being in right now, especially because it is his, you know, between him and Henry Cavill more than anyone else, you know, their experiences have been just garbage. Right.
So. Right. Yeah.
He says he's very proud of the work that he did in the Flash movie. So. And I think we'll see how that goes, but he will not be directing the Batman movie.
Yeah.
But, you know, speaking of Batman, I am the only one, despite my attempts, to get others to read it with me.
Well, come on, Paul. Your attempt started last night.
True, true.
Last night at about 9 p.m. Hey, anybody reading One Bad Day, the Rachel Gould story? Anybody doing that? No, Paul, we're not. Okay.
Yeah, if you started,
this morning. And then this morning, so did you guys read One Bad Day by Ray Jungle? No, Paul. As we said last night, no.
Yeah. If you want to try to convince us, you do that the day we're buying our books.
Yeah, that's a Tuesday conversation, Paul. Not a Friday night conversation.
Technically, I mentioned it when we talked about the first One Bad Day book. So this has been like a 6-month lead up.
I just want to point out that Wayne and I's response was, fuck you, Paul. No.
Yeah,
it was. Yeah, it was. Yeah,
they're not wrong. They're not wrong. But they were wrong for not reading this book, regardless of my attempts, because this is the final One Bad Day, which I think I've only read like three of. Like I read the first. I read the Riddler. I read the Penguin. I think I purchased the Clayface, but didn't read it. So, you know, I've been kind of inconsistent, but so have the books. So I'm not a. You know, I don't feel too bad about it, but you know, I did pick up. Oh wow, I bought the Bane one and the Mr. Freeze one and haven't read them. Mm. But I did read this one because this is the one I was excited for the most. Batman, One Bad Day, Ra's al Ghul, Tom Taylor, Ivan Reis are the creative team on it, and I was like, you can't go wrong, and I was right. Like the book is fantastic. It is a very much a kind of a classic Ra's al Ghul story in the way that, you know, you used to read them from Neil Adams and who wrote those?
It was Neil Adams on drawing them. And it wasn't Marv Wolfman. It was. Shit.
Yeah,
I should know this. I'm sorry. I don't recall.
That's OK. Neither of us do. Denny O'Neill?
Yeah, Denny O'Neill. There you go.
Yeah, Denny O'Neill.
Yeah.
You know, and eventually they also, I mean, they, you know, they had some great stories in Batman, and then they had some great graphic novels. You know, always have been a fan of those types of stories.
I fell in love with Talia in the Neil Adams Denny O'Neill run. Just
saying. Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I understand why Batman, you know, even though you're going, she's bad for you, Batman. We understood.
We understood. Keep the cowl on, Batman.
That's right. Keep it on.
But, you know, so this book was very much in that style. In fact, Ivan Reis, even at certain points, kind of mimics a Neil Adams style. And you do have a shirtless Batman wearing the cowl.
Wearing his Batman pants.
Wearing his Batman pants.
The Batman pant, the shirtless wearing the Batman pants with the cowl on always cracks me up.
Yep. You definitely have a scene with him and Ra's al Ghul sword fighting in the snow.
Uh-huh.
And it's, you know, it's very much a callback to that. So if you are a fan of those stories, it's great. Now, I will say, for what it's worth, I feel like the only one who got the memo on what this One Bad Day series is supposed to be was probably Tom King and Mitch Gerrards on the first one, because that was the only one that kind of felt like they were trying to do a Killing Joke style story.
Right.
At least to the ones I've read. The rest of them have felt like good Batman stories, but not necessarily like Killing Joke level interpretations of the characters. Same with this one, right? This isn't necessarily a Killing Joke masterpiece that's going to go down in history, you know, that we're still going to be talking about it 40 years later. But it's a damn good Batman Ra's al Ghul story. It's exactly what you would expect from one. You know, some iconic imagery. You know, I thought it was just a really, really good book. And so if you like those types of stories, you know, and that's the type of stuff that those are my favorite Batman stories. Those are my favorite Batman the Animated Series episodes.
Right.
You know, are the ones with Ra's al Ghul. And so if you enjoyed that, this is 100% up your alley.
Well, I'm going to read it and the other One Bad Day stories, but I'll read them when they hit the DC Infinite app.
Yeah. I mean, they're like $8 a piece, right? $9 a piece, something like that. So they're, you know, they're certain they're continuity light, I would say. So you could probably, waiting till then is not going to inhibit anything. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hoping for them all to be combined in a sale as well.
Yeah, that's true too. That's probably what I will wait for to pick up the rest of them. So that when they're 99 cents, when I can get all of the books for less than the cost of one. So Batman, One Bad Day, Ra's al Ghul, I'll give it a thumbs up. But guys, we also have the new volume of Doctor Strange this week.
Yeah, this is the book that picks up after the resurrection of one Doctor Stephen Strange.
I mean, he died for like 2 months.
Yeah, he was dead, and then he was the servant of death, and you know, so I mean, he was legit dead, and you know, at the end of that, he got to come back to life and you know retake the mantle of Sorcerer Supreme of Earth. And, you know, one of our big concerns about, or at least my big concern at the end of Strange, the previous series, which all centered around Clea, my concern was that they would shuffle Clea out of the book, that she'd, you know, go back to the dark dimension or that she'd just become, you know, a minor secondary character in the book. And I have to say, I was pleased that she feels like she's taking on a significant role in this story. Even though we do get to see that while initially things are comfy cozy in the Strange household, you know, because Clea is Dr. Strange's wife, there are some problems that occur later in the book. But I would like to say that I would have preferred a different title to this series. I got two things I want to say. One, I want to talk about the title of the series. And I would have liked it to have been called Doctors Strange.
She's not a doctor, though.
But she could have an honorary degree from like a university.
Maybe just call it Mr. and Mrs. Strange. Something. Yeah, I would have liked to have seen the acknowledgement.
Yeah, or Strange characters. And Wife or something like that. I just want Clea, you know, in the title of the book. You know, Sorcerers Supreme also would have been an acceptable title. The other thing I want to talk about is the cover art on this book by Alex Ross. I believe that's Alex Ross, right?
If it's not, it sure as hell looks like him.
Yeah, it's Alex Ross. And I do not care for his cover work lately.
Me either.
And it's the choice of colors. There is a real weird... it's super vibrant and not in a good way. And he's been doing the cover art recently for like the Hulk and other books, so like Fantastic Four. He's doing it there as well. And he has adopted a really weird color palette that I do not care for. It is not appealing. It's not evocative. It's the same sort of palette. It's almost like a 70s lens, right? You know, it's just colors are a little hot, and I don't care for it at all.
it was interesting because Alex Ross was the guy that you go to and you look at his art and it looks photorealistic. And part of that was his colors.
Right.
And that's not the case for some for these anymore.
Yeah. I don't know what he's trying to do there. I don't care for it. That's all I'm saying.
Damn it, Alex.
Yeah. But fortunately, the artwork in the book by Pasquale Ferry, I think, is fantastic. Mostly. I love this stuff in the Sanctorum. There are a couple of panels that I just absolutely did not care for. They seemed maybe a little rushed, but there is a little bit of Paul Smith in the way he draws these characters. And I'm a huge Paul Smith fan back when he was drawing Doctor Strange back in the 80s and 90s. I dug that. And I dug how he depicts, you know, like this is the first time I've seen the bearded hooded Daredevil. And I was like, OK, now that's got me curious. I haven't read a Daredevil book in forever, but OK, that seems interesting. I love the pages where, you know, we get like a full page of just Doctor Strange and Clea sitting in bed drinking, you know, tea. You know, I love all of this. And plus, Bats plays a big role in this story. I think there's a lot to love here. And it's setting up a murder mystery in this book because one of the Dark Lords gets murdered at the end of the book, and it sure does look like Clea may have been involved.
Yeah, which I expect to have relationship tensions between them because of it.
Yeah,
I love seeing them together, and you know that it's going to come down to a case of she's bloodthirsty and he's not.
Right.
And it's going to cause severe strain in their marriage.
Yep.
Yeah, I think I would have. I mean, I enjoyed this book. You know, it's by Jeb McKay, who's going to be taking over the Avengers here in a little bit. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. Or Jed. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more stability.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, you know, give me like one storyline where they're not arguing.
Right. Well, there's a couple of panels where they're doing it, Paul. There's a couple of panels.
Yeah. Well, true. There's a couple of panels. But I would have liked like one storyline where things are good between them before we instantly go to problems.
Yeah.
Right. For me, I feel like you have to establish a status quo. And maybe this is their status quo. Maybe their status quo is volatile.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's what they're trying to present. But I enjoyed it. I did like the Pasquale Ferry art.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a good book.
I want this book to be more, and I'm going to date myself here. I want it to be more heart to heart, more Macmillan and wife. I want that, you know, that couple solving murder mysteries. Yeah, you know,
I
want
it to I be think the they thin, should embrace that more.
Yeah, I want it to be the Thin Man with Magic, right? I don't want it to be, I think my wife is a murderer, right?
I married an axe murderer.
That's right.
One of the things I really appreciated is this callback to another era of checking in with all the rest of the Marvel Universe. You don't need to know their full stories, but Strange has been dead, so all of the other characters kind of pop in. You get a little bit of what's going on in all of the other books without needing to actually read them.
Well, and I think that worked really well for me. Like I said, you know, it's the first time I've seen this version of Daredevil, and now suddenly I'm interested in a Daredevil book. This Marvel should be doing this a lot more. This is what they used to do all the time.
Exactly. Right? That's you why know? I say it feels like a callback.
It does. It feels like the way we used to tell stories in the Marvel Universe, where everything was occurring in the same world at the same time. And I love that because I was I'm reading She-Hulk right now. And, you know, that felt very much of the right now, the way Jen is depicted reaching out to Doctor Strange. I dug that a lot, and it made me very curious about what's going on in those other books. And I hope they continue to do that kind of thing.
Yeah, I could have done without a backup story.
I actually like the backup story in this book. I like seeing what Wong is up to. I enjoyed, you know, the idea that, you know, Wong is a different kind of agent for Agents of Wand, which is wizardry, alchemy, necromancy division, which I find hysterical, or department, not division. But, you know, his thing is he's not going to beat the shit out of the bad guys. He's going to convince the bad guys to come over to the good side. I thought that was a fun story. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I liked it. I don't know that I need it in every issue. You know, I've long stated, at least, that I prefer, give me a $4 book with no backup story or a $3 book with no backup story rather than a $5 book. To throw a backup story in it with diminishing quality. This one was a quality one. I'll give it that.
I will say if they're going to do backup stories, I do prefer new backup stories versus when they were giving us reprints for a while.
That's a good point.
And the good news about this backup story is it ties into the main story, right? I mean, that last panel brings us back to how the main story ends. And it suggests that the Agents of Wand are going to show up in the main story. You know, and it's going to be perhaps Wong investigating who did this murder, and oh my God, was it Clea? Mm-hmm. I dug it. I liked this book a lot. I just think they need to change the cover artist. Sorry, Mr. Ross.
Well, so here is where we have a real discussion.
Yes, going from Wong to Wang.
So this week, I just happened to come across it. I don't even know how I came across it. Just randomly, that there is a new book out from Dark Horse called Order and Outrage, written by Jim Starlin with art by Rags Morales. I mean, that's a superstar creative team. And I feel like I should have heard about this book before now.
Friend of the podcast, Jim Starlin, I might
say. That's right. Friend of the podcast, Jim Starlin.
I had not heard about this either. And, you know, I follow Jim Starlin online and, you know, I backed his recent Dreadstar Kickstarter, you know, the second Dreadstar Kickstarter. I was stunned that I hadn't heard of this book. And so when Paul mentioned it this week, you know, I was like, oh, wow, can't wait to read that. There's some really weird things about this book and they're all meta. In that, number one, there is no communication from the writer or the editor to the reader. There is nothing in the book saying, hey, here's how this book came to be. There is no, hey, we're looking forward to, you know, your feedback. Contact us here at Dark Horse, yada, yada, nothing like that. And the reason why that feels like it's so missing is that the last page and back cover feel like they were ripped out of the book. You know, we all read it digitally, and this book just ends. It ends without any kind of, you know, to be continued, you know, join us next time, nothing like that.
It kind of feels like, I mean, I reached out to the guys when I finished reading it. I was the first one to read it, and it's 17 digital pages, but there's a lot of
double page spreads. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I got to the final page and I tried turning it, and it's like, this book's over. And I'm like, what do you mean? Like, it doesn't say the end. It doesn't say to be continued. There's no back matter. There's no letter page. There's no back cover. And like you said, Aaron, it feels like what did I? It feels like the first 17 pages of a graphic novel. It feels like it truly felt like an incomplete file.
It did.
And maybe that's what we're dealing with. But all three of us are dealing with it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the story ends with our main character, you know, eyes to the camera, you know, being freaked out. And all it needed was a to be continued right there at the bottom. And you would have felt better about it. But, you know, I flipped to the next page and it was like, hey, you know, you might want to go ahead and pre-order Order and Outrage number two. And I'm like, huh, this is so strange that it's over. But before we jump into the story, I want to talk a little bit about the artwork. There is something very Richard Corbin to me. About the way this book is illustrated.
Especially the last few pages.
Yeah. Well, and I feel like it's not just the way it's drawn, but it's also the way it's colored. It reminds me very much of Dan in the way some of this is colored. And of course, the gratuitous nudity. And that we don't shy away from the penis. You know, a lot of times in books, you know, we might be happy to show naked ladies, but a lot of times they'll cover up the penis parts. And that was not the case here. We got to see this guy's dork on a couple of panels.
Yeah, they shadow out his ass, but put so much detail into the penis.
Yeah. Well, and I'd like to point out he's a shower.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like that was just done for the shock value of it. It didn't add anything to the story at all. It was completely gratuitous and unnecessary. Like most of the things in this book, it just is one more thing they threw at a wall that didn't stick for me.
I am very curious. This is one of those choices that I'm very curious. Was that the artist choice, or did Jim Starlin in his script, you know, tell Rags Morales, lots of cock here. We want to see all the cock, lots of cock. It's a flaccid cock, but it's a big cock.
I'm going to guess that was Rags Morales who brought that in. I'm going to guess Jim Starlin's like, they're laying in bed after sex or something like that. Uh-huh. And, you know, the pages came in and he was like, okay, well, yeah, mature readers.
Yeah. I another complaint, again, meta about this book. There is an alternate cover, a cover B by Jim Starlin that we don't get to see here.
Oh, I did not know that.
Not included. And that super annoys me. You know, because, you know, Jim Starlin, legendary comic book artist and writer. I want to see that artwork, and there's no reason not to give that to me in the digital copy.
Yeah, I agree.
Super frustrated by that. But what did you think of the story, guys?
Wayne?
What story? This was a bunch of throwing things at the wall to see what would fit, jumping around in time. For a first issue, what it requires from me, especially for this is a new setting, new characters. It needs to make me either care about a character, care about a setting, or give me a mystery plot that I'm interested in. And it did none of that. It could have done something near the end when she sees this text and freaks out about it. But we don't know what the text was because it's written in some other language. We don't know why she's freaked out.
You know, especially because there's no back matter. I was like, it would have been nice if that text was just in English to understand, like, why is she upset instead of just like, hey, she's randomly upset.
Yeah. Honestly, the only thing I liked about this book was the art on some of the pages and like the spaceship designs. I hated this book.
Paul?
I don't know that I have. I don't know that I'm the complete opposite of your feeling on this, Wayne. I actually enjoyed the book.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the art was great, you know, penis notwithstanding. I do 100% agree. Like, I wish that text at the end had been in English, because the ending just totally fell flat for me. I feel like if this was the first 17 digital pages of this felt like the first 17 digital pages of a graphic novel to me. And yeah, as a graphic novel, I think I probably would have enjoyed it more, because I would have gotten a more fulfilling story and I wouldn't have been left with such a bad taste in my mouth at the end. But due to the way this was done. But if this was truly the first 17 digital pages of a graphic novel, I'd keep reading. And yeah. So that's where I kind of fall in line.
Yeah. To your point, I feel like this is not a natural act break, right? I mean, the action did not, you know, fully set the stage for an act two. I feel like we're just mid part of act one, and it just was, okay, we have to turn in X amount of pages, done, you know?
Yeah.
But what I did like about the book is they're telling a story about class, and that, you know, it is hard for people in one class to break out and ascend to another. And I'm interested in the way that he's telling that story. There are some images on the page that I'm just captivated by. And I'm like, I need to know more about that. You know, there is a two-page spread where there is some kind of, it looks like God machine floating in space. You know, there's almost a celestial Jack Kirby-esque sort of look to it. And there's all this Kirby crackle in the background. I'm like, I don't know what this is, but I need to know more about that, because this is freaking cool. There's a lot of images like that. And I like that there are very high tech settings. There are very low tech settings. We are catching this character at different points in her life. The opening page where she is just, you know, woman out of time. She's an entity, it seems like, out of time. Yeah. I'm just really interested in that. Jim Starlin has a tendency to write a lot about religion. I think he's still trying to resolve some issues he has. And that's true in almost all of his work. I mean, from his earliest days writing Adam Warlock stories to writing Dreadstar to now. And I'm always interested in his take on it because he always kind of comes at it from a different angle. I was fundamentally unsatisfied with the way this story was told in terms of where it ended. Like I said, it was a partial act one.
It feels like we were supposed to be as shocked as she was.
Right.
But we have no context.
You're exactly. Absolutely right. But I feel like that's going to happen in the subsequent pages. And I think, you know, my guess is that this is not an error on Jim Starlin's part. It's not an error on the artist's part. It's an error on the editor's part. And that said, I'm willing to read the story in its total before I pass judgment. There's enough here for me to like so far. And I think Rags Morales has drawn the hell out of this book. So I'm in. And, you know, I'm hoping for more penis, you know, much more penis. I think they can turn the penis to 11.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you were most interested in art-wise was the penis. So.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Very detailed. Very detailed.
All the cock you need and still leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, the art is the big thing I do want to call out that I enjoyed. You were mentioning some of the designs. I love the mech designs that they have. I love their spaceship designs. Mm-hmm. All of the futuristic technology just looks really cool.
Yeah, completely agree. Completely agree. Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What's coming out next week?
Well, next week we have a bunch of new stuff coming from DC Comics, including Dark Knights of Steel, issue 10. I'm going to pause here a minute and just kind of find out who's
far behind on that.
I was about to say, is anyone up to date on that? I feel like I need to get caught up.
I bought all the comics, but I think I am 4 or 5 issues behind.
Damn. Yeah.
I am fully up to date on it.
And Wayne, has it kept its quality?
Yes, I still love the book. I'm looking forward to seeing how they wrap it up.
Okay. There's I think 12 issues, right? So I need to work on getting caught up on that one. Because they took a break and I don't think I've read a single issue since the reveal that the Superman and cousin are bad. Not spoilers. Because of that. Oh, sorry. You read that part. We talked about that.
there's more to that, too, as the story goes on. It was the break was not good for momentum of the book at all.
Yeah, agreed. All right. So I'll work on getting caught up on that. And we will certainly talk about, if not next issue, we'll talk about it in time for the finale. Also from DC Comics, we have new issues of Action Comics, Stargirl, here's another question that I have for you. Is anyone reading Gotham City Year One by Tom King and Phil Hester? Started. Yeah, me either. That's probably one I'll check out and trade.
I'll check it out on the Infinite app.
Yep. And we have a couple of interesting first issues from DC Comics. One, The Unstoppable Doom Patrol by Dennis Culver and Chris Burnham.
I might check it out.
They advertised that in most of the DC books this week.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm in a weird place with Doom Patrol of I like the concept. I love the first season of the show. But every time I jump into the books, I just get disappointed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I feel you there. But I'm interested.
Yeah. And here's an interesting book. It is, an Elseworlds title or a black label title. Waller versus Wildstorm. And so it features Amanda Waller, right, versus the Wildstorm characters. Also includes the character Deathstroke. And it's set in the early 1980s.
Yep. Lois Lane is in this book as well.
Yeah, and it's written by national security reporter Spencer Ackerman from The Daily Beast and Reign of Terror. Comics and video game writer Evan Narcisse, who wrote the Spider-Man Miles Morales and Gotham Knights video games. I don't know. It's kind of like an espionage story. Like the cover art is totally my jam. I might check out what the interior, and Jesus Marino is the interior artist.
I'm not a big Wildstorm fan, but I'd be willing to look at some preview pages to see if it gets me.
And it definitely has that, like, if you look at the cover, it definitely has that early 80s graphic novel vibe. Like, it even has fake price stickers on it. Oh, that's, you know, like those old, like, green, you know, price stickers that they just kind of, like, put on the covers. I might, I'm definitely going to check out the interior art and see if it's worth picking up. It's certainly an intriguing book to me.
Same here. I'm very interested in the idea.
Yeah. For Marvel Comics, we have the newest issues of Invincible Iron Man and Thor, featuring Thor versus Doctor Doom. And we also have the newest issue of Strange Academy Finals. I think it's a 6-issue series before it concludes. So
I'm behind issue. On that one. Okay. I am not current. I have it. I bought the books and haven't read them. So.
Well, we'll get caught up in time for the final issue.
Yeah. Well, anything else, Paul?
No, that's plenty.
Well, hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Are you getting enough cock here on Funny Books with Aaron and Paul? Let us know. Give us a call, 682-800-3494. That number, once again, 682-800-3494. If we use your voicemail on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
Or some penis. you can also hit us up on IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter.
Well, guys, let's do this all over again next week, and maybe we'll kick off Aberrant April.
Aberrant April. See you guys then.
Bye.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.